It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by on-camera and voiceover talent RodHunter.com and the law offices of Matthew Simone. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist Bob Siegel.
Those who went through Hurricanes Helene and Milton are thinking about their lives and their loved ones, not politics. But guess who finds politics in everything? That's right, politicians. Thank you for playing. Well, much as it sounds good to avoid the subject of politics, unfortunately, average citizens have to live under the laws created by politicians. And when they develop a narrative that slams free speech, the situation not only becomes important, but very precarious. The Democrats have commandeered a new word, disinformation. I guess even they see the need for variety. Once in a while, they want to mix it up, use a word different than their favorite word, existential. Donald Trump is an existential threat. Climate change is an existential threat. So once in a while, they take a break, and the word this last week has been disinformation. And catch the latest. The latest accusation. Those who criticize the Biden administration are guilty of disinformation. Now, that's important because this is happening around a time when politicians such as Kamala Harris, nominee for president, Hillary Clinton, John Kerry, people like that are saying that disinformation should be outlawed. And who will decide what disinformation is? They will. Now, we don't need lectures from the Biden administration on disinformation. After all, he's the one who keeps putting out the Charlottesville lie. The lie about border workers whipping people. The lie that there was no discussion between him and Hunter on any of his foreign business dealings. The lies about January 6th claiming that Trump tried to incite a mob, when in fact Trump had offered to call in the National Guard and was refused by the mayor of Washington, D.C. And then that crackerjack job of withdrawing from Afghanistan. That's another lie from the Biden administration. Don't worry, I won't list all of them. We don't have the time. We don't have the amount of radio shows to list all of them. But the current complaint of the Democrats is that Donald Trump is politicizing the tragedy of hurricanes. Yeah, I guess visiting the victims, while Joe was at the beach and Kamala was on the West Coast campaigning and getting his friend Elon Musk to set up a communication system for the victims, I guess that's politicizing an event. And they're also calling Trump a liar, and in doing so, they're making up lies about him and his supporters. In the aftermath of Hurricane Helene, person after person in North Carolina and victim after victim talked about how slow or non-existent FEMA was with any help. This leads to one of the so-called lies. Apparently, FEMA had limited funds for hurricane victims because over $1 billion had been given for the resettling of illegal migrants. Now, what was the source of that? Secretary of Homeland Security Mayorkas. He said there's not enough money to get through the hurricane season. Well, why not? It turns out that a lot of this money is going for illegal immigrants. When this first came up, the administration admitted it while trying to deny it at the same time. Oh, no. We have a hurricane fund, and no money from hurricane funds were diverted toward illegal immigrants. I mean, not illegal immigrants, undocumented workers. But that never came out of the hurricane fund. Yeah, they had another fund, but both funds were under the umbrella of FEMA. I don't care what pocket it was. Neither FEMA nor any government agency should be emboldening people who are in our country illegally. Meanwhile, while this is going on, Harris brags about $157 million given to Lebanon. We're going to give that to Lebanon because those poor people are the victims of Israelis who are retaliating against rockets shot from Lebanon. Now, I know that not every citizen in Lebanon is a terrorist. They shouldn't be allowing any terrorists to live in their country. That's an internal problem. But I understand there's a difference between the average Lebanon civilian and terrorists. But there's also a difference between civilians in another country and our own civilians. Our own people are supposed to come first. Not to mention the billions we give to country after country, not just Lebanon, including Iran, who has sworn that America is the great Satan and must die. We give Iran money, but we ran out of money for our own people, and we pay for the well-being of our enemies with the tax dollars of the American citizens, including the American citizens who are hurricane victims. But FEMA has other priorities as well. There was a Zoom call in 2023 where we found out that one of their priorities was how we help the LGBTQ community. Their number one goal, equity. That's a quote. Here's another quote. There are systematic differences in society that access alone cannot fix. FEMA must direct its resources to eliminate disparities in these outcomes. Oh, I get it. I understand. You see, a hurricane hurts LGBTQ people more than straight people. Those racist, homophobic hurricanes? How dare they? Who do these hurricanes think they are? Meanwhile, in the wake of all these criticisms against FEMA, some representatives from FEMA are telling us that their feelings are getting hurt. Their feelings are getting hurt. I think I'm going to cry. Peter Doocy of Fox News, just about the only one that ever challenges the press secretary from the White House, had it out with Karine Jean-Pierre when she says that, no, we are going to give as much money as we need to for the hurricane victims. That's a lie when you say we aren't, but Congress needs to approve it. So Doocy says, well, Congress didn't need to approve the dollars going to Lebanon. Why do they need to approve this? Then she accuses Doocy of spreading disinformation. He says, what disinformation? It was Mayorkas himself who said you don't have the money. Why do we need congressional approval for the hurricane, but we don't need the approval for money going overseas? She said he was spreading disinformation by asking the question. Folks, I hope you're paying attention to this. A reporter, a journalist, even asking a question of a politician, a question armed with facts and quotations from people in their own administration is being accused of disinformation. Doocy is getting his information from Secretary of Homeland Security Mayorkas, but it's disinformation. How do they get away with that? Why do they have the unmitigated gall to disseminate that narrative? Because they're hoping you are just that stupid. Of course, they know not everybody is that stupid. That's why they want legal teeth behind this. The instructions are clear. We are to disseminate the narrative from the administration. Otherwise, we will be accused of misinformation. And my friends, that is a preview of what will happen if they stay in power. These are the people who said that when we saw Biden mumbling, bumbling, and stumbling, we were watching fake news. Just a few weeks later, they got him out because his debate was seen on all the news networks, not just Fox. They couldn't accuse that one of misinformation. And remember, while Biden keeps accusing conservatives of misinformation, others in his party are saying that misinformation needs to be outlawed. This is a chilling, dangerous recipe. Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't times when conservatives do say things that aren't true. They do, and we should call it out. One of the other things Biden complained about was that GOP Congresswoman Marjorie Greene said that the hurricanes were being engineered by people who control the weather, trying to take out certain districts in preparation for the election. Now, when I first heard this, I know Green says a lot of over-the-top things, but when I first heard this, I was hoping she was joking. And maybe we'll discover that she was, but it's being taken seriously, so let me respond to it seriously. I don't agree with Marjorie Green that people are controlling the weather. Not that human ingenuity isn't fascinating. We do seed clouds. Maybe the day will come and we can control the weather more. I'm no meteorologist. I don't think it's happening now. It sounds ridiculous to me. But let me tell you something else. The same Democrats who are complaining about the accusation of engineering the weather are claiming that we can engineer the weather by putting Kamala Harris in office as president because she will do something about global warming. And Donald Trump won't. Yes, according to the Democrats, you can control the weather by voting for Kamala. Hurricanes are caused by global warming, and global warming is caused by people. Connect the dots. That's human beings controlling the weather. It's as if Donald Trump himself is sitting in the dungeon of a gothic mansion, mixing chemicals together and laughing gleefully, and then playing the organ. In reality, Trump is saying he does not want concern about climate change to be used as an excuse for more government regulations, for more government control over our lives. Now, there is a consensus that the world is warming somewhat. It's also true that we've had warming trends in the past. Throughout human history, there have been warming trends, there have been cooling trends. In the 70s, they said the world was getting too cold. Whether or not human beings are causing this with their own carbon emissions, that's what is debatable. What's not debatable is that politicians will exploit it. Never let a good crisis go to waste. And what crisis could be better than a hurricane? This is Bob Siegel, making the obvious obvious.
Believe it or not, Bob Siegel is aware that there may be one or two people who disagree with his opinions. To offer your own comments on the topic at hand, or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, feel free to contact Bob on Facebook or questions@bobsiegel.net.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-age child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
So, you'd like to believe in God, but you keep hearing back and forth debate about whether or not America's forefathers ever had the blessing of God. Well, my friend, they certainly did, at least collectively. While I wouldn't call our Constitution perfect, and it's certainly not inspired like the Bible, it did put in place some very wise checks and balances which have kept our country free for well over 200 years. Unfortunately, this freedom weighs in the balance. There are well-funded, well-organized movements calling for the abolishment of our Constitution, nothing less, all coinciding with an election year. As we move now into the heart of our election season, the final stretch, there's all kinds of talk about election fraud, from flooded mail-in ballots to ballot harvesting to illegal residents voting to dead people coming to life and voting. Every election year, I always say to those of you out there that are atheists, how come so many people resurrect at election year? Dead people on the rolls. This has been absolutely proven, absolutely validated. Very, very few people are doing anything about it. And of course, a subject that gets revisited lately every election year, the popular vote as opposed to the Electoral College. You're going to be hearing about it again in November. We're already hearing a lot about it now, but it'll intensify by November. If Donald Trump wins the electoral vote, but not the popular vote, many will try to insist that he is not the true winner. Well, they won't stop with the popular vote. They'll also accuse him of cheating, of stealing mailboxes, working with Russia, you name it. But right now, for today, I merely want to focus on the Electoral College, because this, at least, is a discussion that well-intentioned people with different opinions can have in good faith and in a respectful manner. Because this is a discussion that gets back to the Constitution and the wisdom of our forefathers. And finally, because this concerns the future of elections, with all the talk about abolishing the Electoral College, if not the entire Constitution itself. Sometimes, my friends, the best way to find wisdom looking forward is to stop, take a deep breath, and look back. What better place to begin by looking back in time years ago? Maybe you voted for Trump. Maybe you voted for Hillary. Maybe you voted for neither. Doesn't matter. You'll want to pay attention right now, because your preference for president does not change the truth. Okay, the day after the 2016 election. The Democratic Party was still in shock over a surprise Trump victory. Some consolation was immediately articulated in the knowledge that Hillary at least won the popular vote. Vice presidential running mate, Virginia Senator Tim Kaine, said, and I quote, "She became the first major party nominee as a woman to be president, and last night won the popular vote of Americans." Did she? Did she really? Okay, look, many Americans do not like or understand our Electoral College system. On one hand, I can't blame them. It's been made to come across as very confusing. It's actually a lot simpler than that. But I don't blame people for being confused. And back in 2016, for Hillary's fans, those who voted for her, they were absolutely livid. In their minds, Hillary's popular vote victory was interpreted as a conviction that she was indeed the true election winner. For this reason, some perspective is in order. Actually, Clinton did not win the popular vote. Yes, you heard me correctly. Clinton did not win the popular vote. All right, I'll say it just one more time. Clinton did not win the popular vote. Why? Why do I say this? It's simple, because we were not taking a popular vote. We were taking an Electoral College vote. Oh, true. Technically, she did win a certain nationwide counting that we call a popular vote, but in reality, that tally is nothing more than a mere shadow of the Electoral College. Leftover debris showing how the votes would have looked if we were going to ignore the states they came from and throw them all into one bundle. However, this was a nation which knew ahead of time that the votes were going to be determined by the states. Knowing this affected the way people voted. Let me give you an example. Many Democrats in California may not have felt the need to vote for Clinton, since they knew California was not a battleground state, but rather a blue state. In California, Hillary was a shoo-in. One or two more votes this way or that way weren't really going to make any difference. But of course, each person talks about the one or two votes. If enough people do that, it's many votes. Likewise, many Republicans in California who preferred a different nominee than Trump. He was a very unconventional candidate. They preferred someone else. The people that they wanted didn't get the nomination. And these people wanted to appease their consciences by not voting for Trump. A lot of them have admitted over Facebook, other internet exchanges, that had they thought their California vote mattered, they might have plugged their noses and marked the ballot for Trump as the lesser of two evils in order to at least prevent a Clinton victory. But knowing Trump had no chance in California, no chance, they were able to have their cake and eat it too. On one hand, they can brag that they never voted for Trump. On the other hand, they would not have been held responsible by other conservatives had it been a Clinton victory. My friends, the situation was the same in state after state. Nobody in Tennessee or Alabama had doubts that Trump would win. Nobody in Massachusetts or New York had doubts that Clinton would win. Had our country thrown out the Electoral College ahead of time and decided to go with a straight popular vote from coast to coast, our citizens would have viewed their own votes as being far more important. Many more people would have made it to the polls. I'm not saying that means Trump would have won. I'm saying nobody knows how it would have come out. And that means nobody knows Clinton would have won either. Therefore, the so-called popular vote that Clinton loves to brag about does not really tell us anything. In the face of such elections, it is important to review the wisdom of our forefathers in setting up the Electoral College in the first place. We must keep in mind that America was created to be a union of separate states, functioning in many ways as their own separate countries, but united for common good, such as mutual protection. In this vein, each state individually names its own pick for president. If this were not the case, politicians would do the lion's share of their campaigning in our most heavily populated areas, such as New York City and Los Angeles. The middle of the country could be virtually ignored. As for the promises to these states in the middle, what promises? There would be none. At least none that any politician felt obligated to make. My friends, the name of our country is not America. The name of our country is the United States of America. That is why we have an electoral college, and that is why the ill-titled popular vote should not make a hill of beans of difference. This is Bob Siegel making the obvious obvious. I'm Bob Siegel, here to talk about my latest book, The Many Myths About Ministry. As you know, I'm a Christian apologist, but let me tell you something. In my many years of interactions with skeptics, doubters, and even seekers, I have found that the vast majority of their problems with Christianity stem from previous church experiences. Yes. What's more, many of their concerns are valid and serve as inspiration for this book. While defending the truth of the Bible and the importance of the gospel message, I nevertheless take an honest look at the way Christians interact with each other. From the larger issues of putting our leaders on too high a pedestal, to the unfair judging of the way another person worships, to the unsolicited advice which claims to have been led by the Spirit of God. Of course, and I do believe the Spirit of God speaks, I do, but a lot of times Christians are putting words in his mouth. Who are we kidding? My friends, this simple, easy read will strike a chord of familiarity with anyone involved in church life. It's a call to lay aside the unimportant issues that distract us and return to the heart of Christian community.
The Many Myths About Ministry by Bob Siegel, available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539, W&S Electric. Welcome back to 1170 AM, 96.1 FM, The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. Say hello again to my producer, Brendan Thomas.
Good evening, Bob. How are you doing tonight?
Doing okay. And yourself?
I'm doing fantastic. As you could tell, it is the fall season because I'm seeing all of these Halloween decorations left and right. And
yeah. Are you a big Halloween fan?
I'm a huge Halloween fan. I like dressing up my son.
I love the candy. There, it's about where it ends with me. Now, when I was a kid, I loved it. I loved trick-or-treating. I loved putting on costumes.
So you weren't a fan of like the old Universal monster movies back in the day, personally, I guess.
Which ones do you have in mind?
Like Dracula, Frankenstein. Oh, these are some classics.
Yeah, I'm okay with them. I didn't love them. I'll tell you, the scariest movie I ever saw was the movie Alien.
Yes.
The first one.
Yes.
The others, I thought, lost it because it was the surprise and the suspense when that blob got on that guy's head and then suddenly they got rid of it and he was all right. You knew something was going to happen, but you didn't know what.
Not to mention...
And that was unimaginable what did happen.
Not to mention, they made the character so likable. Like, you can tell that this crew that was on the ship were in space for so, so long and they got such good chemistry that when one of them gets taken by the alien, you really feel for that character or you really feel for the other characters in that matter.
Yeah.
The rest of them are either action films or exposition.
They were good. And less is more in movies. By not seeing much of the alien, it just made it spookier. So to me, that was the scariest movie I ever saw.
I like that. I like that opinion. There is a lot of really scary films out there. I have too many to count personally for me, but I always watch Night of the Living Dead right before.
I have seen that. I've never gotten into the Halloween saga or the Elm Street saga or any of those.
I understand too. So, speaking of movies, I still have a couple more movies to
talk about. Yes, we left in suspense. We heard two of your movie reviews and you had one left over that you didn't get to.
Yeah, and then I also watched an extra one on top of that.
Oh, so, jumping Jiminy.
Yeah, here we go. So, this next movie, I don't know if you've heard of this or not. It's called Am I Racist? And it stars Matt Walsh from Daily Wire.
I think so. It's more of a documentary kind of movie,
it
right?
It is a documentary.
Yes, I have heard of that. I have not seen it.
It is a satirical one. It has to deal with the diversity, equity, and inclusion movement, or the DEI movement.
I hope
they
just slam it in that movie.
It is amazing how they slam it.
Good for them. Yeah. Good for them.
What they do is, so Matt Walsh, he disguises himself as a DEI trainee. So he would go into all these places for studies and stuff, and he would just be bumbling around and making certain comments.
Would he make all the white people sit in the back?
Exactly. Yeah, that's one of the skits. So
it's hard to believe we're really living through these times, folks. It's not your imagination and you're not dreaming.
Exactly. The skits are really the highlights of the film. They really point out the hypocrisy of the DEI movement as it is.
It's as racist could possibly be, and it cloaks itself as being anti-racist.
Exactly. And the other thing I'll give this, as much as I personally don't like Matt Walsh because of his business accusations that he has in the background, and I can go into more details a little bit later on, but I will say as a main actor or like the host, I don't know why, because he plays himself too, but puts on a disguise and everything. He's very charismatic. I will say that much. Like, he can act or he can really disguise himself in the acting role. So for that reason, I'll give another good point. The skits are the main highlights of the film. There are so many skits in between. The issue becomes he has interviews with certain politicians who approve of the DEI movement, and they slow the pace of the movie down, unfortunately, to a T, because what they decide to do is they unedited their footage. So they'll have all the ums, the uhs, and all that stuff. And
oh, so they don't do like CBS did with Kamala, where they edited one of her answers and made it sound better?
No, unfortunately not. And that's another thing that kind of...
So we got the director's cut of the interviews.
Exactly. And that's a shame, because honestly, if you wanted to make your point valid, you could still edit it, and then you can immediately pause their footage or something and then make up a rebuttal statement towards them. And that would have been just as strong. But the fact that you had to leave it in there and then show that their points aren't as strong, I don't know. I just personally wish it could have been a little bit edited in a way where it doesn't feel as skewed.
Like with a little talking over it. At this point, the person I interviewed made a fool of himself.
Yes.
We'll spare like you that.
Thank you. Something like that. But to make sure they get all the ums, the uhs, the... And let me go back to what I was just saying again one more time. Those things. I just feel like it slows the pace of the movie down. And on top of that, again, it just shows me that, okay, well, you're obviously trying to skew into this section. And this is not the only movie I've seen that does this. There's another movie I watched that talks horribly about Michelle Obama's lunch program that was going to schools. I don't know if you were familiar with
that. Oh, I remember that, where the kids were going to have to eat vegetables.
Yes.
And stuff they didn't want to eat.
Exactly. And they were suggesting, oh, there's no food waste. There's absolutely no food waste. And the person that they talked to about this whole situation, once again, they skewed the whole footage, I remember, where they left the ums, the uhs, and the making her look like a fool in the first place. So I'm clearly on your side in this situation. But again, I've seen other documentaries where I'm like, okay, well, you know what? You edit it in a certain way where I can completely see their point of view, but your rebuttal was much stronger, and I appreciate that. So therefore, I'm on your side on that sense. I feel like most documentaries are there to persuade you, in a sense. There's some documentaries that are there to make you learn about something, but for the most part, I think documentaries, especially,
most people have an agenda.
Yeah. Exactly. So another last thing I want to say about the con, and this is just me personally again, I'm going back to Matt Walsh. It doesn't change me about what I know about him personally. So if you don't know, he is part of Daily Wire, and he wanted to re-sign Ben Shapiro. But Ben Shapiro didn't want to re-sign with the Daily Wire, because what the Daily Wire and Matt Walsh wanted to do was take, I want to say, 70% or 80% of his profits away. So he only takes a small portion of the profits for himself.
Oh, well, that sounds unfair.
No, it's extremely unfair.
Since he's the art behind the show and their money.
Exactly. And you know who the bigger star is, really, in all honesty. And Matt Walsh is still popular. Don't get me wrong. He's a super, super popular commentator. But you have Matt Walsh, you have Ben Shapiro, and you have Candace, all on one roof. Who out of those three is probably the most persuasive or the most dedicated fan base in there? I would say Ben Shapiro person. Yeah. That's just me, but you might have a different opinion. But the fact that you would go around with this whole contract, and then he suggested, Matt Walsh at the time was suggesting, oh no, he's just personally attacking me because there's certain political viewpoints that he's against me. When Ben Shapiro actually posted his contract word for word online, like he took screenshots of the contract. Yeah, you can clearly tell it was very skewed for the Daily Wire and Matt Walsh to take a huge profit. So that's why I don't particularly want to say that Matt Walsh, I'll support him all the way. But this movie in particular, Am I Racist?
You're going to at least give him credit for this movie.
I will give him credit. This is a really good film. It's still in theaters, but very slimming showings because it's been in theaters for, I think, a couple months now. But I will give it an 8 out of 10. A 4 out of 5.
Is it available yet by streaming? Or
not just yet. I think it will be eventually, especially on Daily Wire's like streaming platform. Because during the COVID season, that's where I saw most of Daily Wire content too. There was a really, really good scary film too about a girl that was locked in the pantry. And so she used the prayer of God to help get her out of the pantry somehow with an abusive husband that was trying to take their daughter
away. That sounds like what everyone went through in 2020 under COVID. Yeah, we were all locked down.
That's true. You know what the surprising thing too is? You know, conservative films rarely get like the Rotten Tomato scores that they should. Like most of them are like 10%.
Because most of the critics out there are liberals.
Do you know what Am I Racist is at?
Where is it?
71%.
I have heard that a lot of people, even liberals and on the left, are just finding this stuff just so over the top.
The DEI stuff?
They're just getting sick and tired of it.
I can believe it. So if you get a chance to see it in theaters, I would suggest it. And if not, again, it will be available online as well on streaming platforms eventually. Moving on to my next film, we are going to be talking about Average Joe. This movie just came out this past Friday, or Thursday, I guess.
I have not heard anything about this movie.
So this movie has to do with Coach Joe Kennedy. Abbey. If you're not familiar with him, he's the high school football coach that wanted his players to come pray with him in the middle of the field
after
the game.
Yes.
And he got fired over
naturally,
that situation.
Naturally.
Yeah. So my first cause of warning was this was directed by Harold Cronk. If you're not familiar, he directed the first two God's Not Dead.
Uh-oh.
And God Bless the Broken Road. I don't mind
you
God.
You liked the third.
I'm
did. Trying to keep track now. You liked the third God's
yes.
Not Dead. You
and the rest
like
of them I did
one,
not
like. One, two, or four.
Yes, I did not like the other ones. So that had me worried, but I have great news. It is a very, very good film.
All
so
right.
Maybe it's not Harold Cronk. Maybe it's just the writing in certain films that gets me off on the God's Not Dead series or God Bless the Broken Road, for that matter. Well, God Bless the Broken Road, the issue I had was the acting, because our main star is LaDainian Tomlinson, who, if you don't know, is a San Diego Chargers running back. He used to be on the San Diego Chargers, and then he retired. I don't know what he's doing acting. He's got to find another thing. He's got to be a football
analyst.
Well,
he was a name. They probably made money off of his name.
Something like that. So Eric Close plays Coach Joe Kennedy, and it goes through his whole story of when he became a Marine, and then he retired as a Marine, and then wanted to move on to high school football because his children were in high school football. So I'll start with the cons. For how much they say, oh, we have children, and we love our children, we want to support our children, we don't get a lot of the children aspect. We get a lot more of the husband-wife aspect in the situation, and I think it's a great kind of thing because the wife even tells him in the movie, who's played by Amy Acker, Joe, this is affecting me in my personal life. People are attacking me whenever I go to the grocery store for what you've done at the football field there. And he says, listen, God goes first, but I will always support you in anything I can to protect you. And that's really, really well done. I think they really put that placement out there for how well their relationship was straining during this time too. But all in all, the acting and chemistry is good. You know what the weird thing about this movie is, are you familiar with the show Modern Family?
I don't believe so, no.
Oh, okay. This was an ABC sitcom, and it was like a documentary style, mockumentary style, I guess you could say, where they had a camera crew, and they would see
it. Oh, kind of like The Office, that kind of thing?
Yes, where exactly.
It's really actors, but they're acting like it's a reality.
Exactly.
I like those kind of shows because I hate reality shows, and that makes me love the satire of reality
well,
shows.
Well, for some reason, they decided to film the movie that way, so there's a lot of fourth wall breaking in the middle of scenes.
And you're thinking that doesn't work as well for a movie?
Some scenes, it does not work at all. For example, there's a scene where a family member announces they have cancer, and he goes, I feel really sick. I don't think I'm going to feel better. And the long story short, the scene goes, oh, no, you'll feel better. And then immediately, as soon as they leave the screen there, and then Joe's standing there, he looks at the camera, she never felt better. And then it cuts to them at the cemetery. And I'm like, that doesn't feel very transitional in that sense.
And were they trying to make a joke of it?
Exactly.
It almost,
it's so strange.
If somebody's dying, it's kind
of hard to find
cancer,
the humor. I know.
Yeah,
it's weird. Yeah. But there's other scenes where it does work very well. Like at the Marine camps, he's getting yelled at by his drill sergeant, for example, right? And the drill sergeant walks away and he looks at the camera and he winks. He goes, yeah, that was my drill sergeant. And the drill sergeant comes in to break the fourth wall. He's like, what are you doing yelling at the audience? Now you got to drop and give me 50.
That's funny.
I like that. See, yeah. That part where you're actually transitioning
so
very
the
well.
Fourth wall worked at times and other times did
exactly.
Not work.
My other thing I wanted to mention too is there's a scene also while he's in court where he's getting questioned about biblical verses. Do you know what it says in the book of Genesis? Do you know what it says in John? And he continually says the phrase, I didn't read the Bible. I am a follower of Christianity, but I just don't read the Bible as often as I should. And you know what? That's such a great thing.
He's in court because they're trying him for doing prayer and they're trying to use the Bible against him.
As if
the Bible would be on our side to not allow prayer.
Exactly. That's what they were trying to hint at. I know it sounds
what kind
stupid.
Of scripture were they using to pull that off?
I'm not sure, but all I know is that
everybody knows baseball's in the Bible, in the big inning. Of course, this is football, so the analogy doesn't quite work.
It doesn't make sense in the long run, but I know that most of the court case has been written down, and they try to follow it somewhat to a T. There are a few scenes where they go away from the court case, and that was another con I had on there, but I know it's Hollywood.
Well, I had an atheist come on the air on this program years ago and tried to tell me that Jesus taught separation between church and state. And it was when Jesus said, pay Caesar what is Caesar and give God what is God. I said, what on earth does that have to do with separation?
I don't get it either.
These people, they claim they don't believe in the Bible, but then they'll quote it out of context all the time.
See, the reason why I put the Hollywood thing, there was that scene, obviously, where they're trying to quote scripture. But the one thing I wanted to say super quick about the quoting scripture and him saying that, it's so nice to see in a Christianity movie that it's not a know-it-all Christian. He's literally saying,
yes, and more people can relate to him.
Exactly, and I need to read the Bible more. I like
that
part.
Yeah, and God looks at the heart, and he's not going to give you a Bible exam on judgment.
Exactly. But again, the Hollywood deterioration there was when they're on the field and he goes, can you guys go ahead and kneel on the field for me? And then one of the football players goes, oh, I'm not getting a part of this. if you read the court documents, he literally says all the students were okay with him doing a prayer and they were all joining together. Not one football player protested against the whole situation. It was the fans in the stands that were against the whole situation.
Yeah, there's always some Karen out there that brings it up.
Yeah, is there? And my last little tidbit, obviously they show when Joe was a kid and a teenager, different actors. I'm completely fine with that. Even when he was in his 20s, it's a different actor. But it's weird. They say when I turned 30, I married my wife. It's the same actor when he turns into a 44-year-old Joe. And I'm like, I'm very confused. Why? He hasn't aged a single bit. Yeah, there's not a bit of makeup on him. He looks the exact same. Wow. Yeah, but that's also a nitpick. But honestly, the only thing I have an issue with, again, like we said earlier, was the mix of the comedy and the drama. It's not a very good transition in some scenes. And I'm
very comedy's confused. An interesting thing because it's got to be realistic. You still have to care about the characters and the humor can't be forced.
Yes.
And then there are some subjects that just aren't funny to joke about.
Yeah.
And I say that as somebody who loves comedy.
So I will give this movie the exact same grade as I gave Am I Racist? 8 out of 10, 4 out of 5, and B+. So
very good.
It's very strange I gave such a good review to a movie called Am I Racist?
Well, you're quite a critic. A B+ from you is no small praise.
No, so. Yeah. Especially when it comes to these films, because I feel like I have to defend my religion a lot of the time, because these films, I find that the mainstream audience will be ridiculing constantly. Oh, it's such cheesy
editing.
Do you
go on internet chats about these movies and defend Christianity?
Yes, constantly. And when one of these films, specifically like Average Joe or Woodlawn was another really good one that I highly suggest. When one of those films comes out, I can absolutely 100% defend my religion and that movie at the same time. Movies like God's Not Dead make it a really hard time for me to do that sometimes. So it's a shame. Well, we do have one more segment after this. I do want to actually kind of make a little statement about one of your monologues about the Electoral College when
okay.
we come back.
So. I'd be happy to hear what you have to say.
I'd like to believe in Jesus, but the title itself is an open-ended question. You fill in the rest. I'd like to believe in Jesus, but is there really proof for the resurrection of Christ? How could a loving God send people to hell? How will God judge people who never heard of Jesus? Can a scientific mind really accept miracles? These are but some of the concerns keeping honest seekers from considering Christianity. In an interesting, down-to-earth style, Bob tackles the hardest, most painfully honest questions. Rather than shoving these topics under the rug, Bob shows respect for his readers by providing detailed and compelling explanations. This book has been enjoyed by both skeptics and Christians alike. I'd Like to Believe in Jesus, But, by Bob Siegel. Available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Welcome back to our program. Say hello again to Brendan Thomas.
Well, Bob. So your last monologue had to deal with the Electoral College itself and whether we should keep it or should we stick with the popular.
Well, you realize these politicians that say they want to change it, they can't just go in there and have the Senate vote against it. There would have to be a constitutional convention. I believe it's 2/3 of the states on a constitutional convention. These promises don't mean anything when they claim they're going to get rid of it.
Right. But if I can make an argument for it here. So the term Electoral College, and I don't want to sound the whole separate church from state situation, but the term Electoral College isn't in the Constitution.
Not the term, but they do give the procedure for elections.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. So I just wanted to point that out.
Yeah. Well taken. Yeah. It might not be a bad idea to retire that term. It's a very confusing term.
So the whole point of the Electoral College, I understand, is the fact that you are trying to get the rural states equal amount of opportunity and say in voting.
Yeah, and gives the small states the same opportunity as big. Not 100%, because you do have less electors in a smaller state, so they are taking size into some consideration.
Now, if I can make a point, what you said at the very beginning of your monologue was Hillary Clinton did not win the popular vote.
Because we didn't really take one.
Exactly. But if we did look at that, and Biden didn't win the popular vote either last time, if I remember right, especially with all the electoral fraud that was going on in the first place.
I thought he won both. I mean, won in quotes both, but yeah. That one I don't remember.
But with popular vote, that's the issue, is the electoral fraudness, I thought. The fact that now we can have the rural states really count their own votes, like Georgia doing the hand counting. I just found out from Dave Stahl earlier today that if you send in your vote right now, you can have a QR code. So that way you can make sure you're following where your vote is going everywhere. So that's kind of a cool idea, I think, too, that a lot of states should
implement. I think that is a good idea.
Yeah. And now the hand counting might take a while.
But the fact that there is fraud in some states makes it important for other states to be in charge of their own elections, which I think is more of a case for the Electoral College, too. Mm-hmm.
I still think maybe we should look at it at a different way, possibly, for this whole voting situation. While popular vote makes sense, it especially is important in local elections, for sure, because that's the only way to get
In the local elections, it always is a popular vote.
Is
you're voting for senator, you're running for that's true, or a ballot measure.
And for some reason, in local elections, I don't hear a lot of fraudulent accusations coming out here and there, left and right. So it's very interesting how, in a national way, now that's a different story.
See, that's the thing. Like, if you talk to Mike Friedenberg, he'll say in that last midterm election, he thinks there was a lot of fraud, but they didn't have to do a lot. They only had to do it in a few key states to make it happen.
Specifically the battleground states, like Arizona and Michigan and Pennsylvania. Those are the big ones, too. And I'm glad that Georgia was a battleground state, wasn't it, too?
Yeah, It used to be pretty solidly red. It's a battleground state this time.
Yeah, but the reason why I bring it up is because I am for the hand counting. It is going to be a long process, but I think it's a process that is necessary. Yeah,
I'm very concerned about North Carolina, though, because there's concern. It was a lot of the rural areas that got wiped out, and there's concern about them voting. So a bipartisan committee has been formed to bring in people from other areas to help them vote. You know, Brendan, bipartisan is just, it's code for the Republicans are going to cave to the way the Democrats want things done.
It's very true.
There's no such thing as bipartisan.
It's funny how you mentioned also to me, I think off the air, or maybe it was way back in the day, where I said, oh, there's this politician out in France, and he's a middle person or centralist. And you go, well, if you go way too far to the left, you're going to move that centralist.
The centrist has to keep moving more leftward. He's just not as far over the cliff as others.
Exactly. Yeah. So I can't remember if we talked that on the air, but it is similar in that sense, too, what you just mentioned about the bipartisan.
I came up with an analogy for the Electoral College a number of years ago, and it's going to sound strange coming from me, somebody who doesn't follow sports very much, but since you do.
Okay,
the World Series. How do you win the World Series? You have to win 4 out of the 7 games.
Correct.
Okay, let's say, here's some year, let's say the Yankees and the Giants go to the World Series. The Giants win 4 of the 7 games, so they've won the World Series, right?
Correct.
But what if the Yankees came back and say, yeah, but a lot of those games were close, and we had a lot of runs, even in those games that we lost, and if you took the whole picture of the 7 games and added up all the runs from all the teams, we had more runs. That's a claim for the popular vote. Who would take that seriously with the World Series, though?
See, I thought you were going to go with the Astros situation. I don't know if you remember a few years ago, the Astros won the World Series, but then it comes to figure out they actually cheated to win the World Series because they were banging on trash cans to help the batters know, hey, a fastball's coming, hey, a curveball's coming, and then that would hit them to hit a home run.
Cheated? I didn't know Biden was into sports, too.
Oh, you ran into that one, didn't you? Oh, dang it.
Anyway, you opened the door for me. I went right in.
I know. So
where are you coming down on the Electoral College, pro or con?
As of right now, because of how I would love to have a popular system, I really would. But unfortunately, due to the last election, it's made me lose my confidence, and I'm actually going back into the Electoral College. But will I see it change over time? I think so. I really do think so. I think it's such an old system.
What about the fact that in the states with less people, politicians wouldn't even even feel they needed to go and campaign or promise them anything. They could just campaign in New York City, Los Angeles, maybe Chicago, and that could be it.
Well, I think those urban areas are going to stay that way for a while, unfortunately. I don't see any changes to being blue or red.
Right, but my point is they could just go and campaign in those areas and get enough votes to win the election, and then you're leaving out all these states. That, to me, was the genius behind the Electoral College.
My question is, why did Trump decide to go to Bozeman, Montana, of all places? He knows that he's going to win Montana.
He wants to deal with the congressional seats as well. Like, I think that's why he went to California. He's not going to win California, but he's got to have a Republican Congress. He can't just win. If he gets a Democratic Congress, they're going to impeach him again.
But why, of all places, Montana? I feel very confident Montana is going to
have Republican Congress. Well, you could probably argue that in Montana, all the other California places would be conservative, too.
Now, California, I can agree with you, because especially outside the urban areas, especially those areas, they're starting either A or...
But on the other hand, Liz Cheney was from Wyoming, which is a lot like Montana. And look the train wreck she became.
That was rough. That was rough, for sure. So, again, I am going to say that there is going to be a change within my lifetime to this system. Do I think a lot of people will be happy with it at first? No, but they'll grow accustomed to it. I think the real reason why the Founding Fathers put the Electoral College in, and I said to you this off air, was because at the time we were still worrying about the monarchy system that the UK was bringing to us. And so we were so focused on that, that we weren't even prepared enough for government officials or learning the rules of this government.
And it also goes back to the fact that we're not really a democracy, we're a republic. Mm-hmm. In those days, the electors just went and voted. Today, we take a popular vote in each state, and the way it goes, the electors vote. Technically, the electors don't even have to vote that way. In fact, people talk out of both sides of their mouth. When Trump won the Electoral College, a lot of actors were coming out and trying to talk the electors into just say, you know, just because he won in your state, you don't really have to vote for him. And they were talking about the Electoral College like it's this time-honored tradition from our forefathers and honor the spirit of the Electoral College and don't cast your vote for Trump. Then out of the other side of their mouth, they're going, but of course, Hillary's true president because she won the popular vote.
It's true.
They can't have it both ways.
That's why you always see Maine with that one congressman like voting differently all of a sudden compared to the rest of the state of Maine. I'm like, what? Why? Okay. Well, I guess your area was either different or you wanted to be different. Who knows? But anyways, Bob, thank you so much for this discussion.
It's always a pleasure, Brendan. We'll see you next week, everybody.
The Bob Siegel Show is sponsored in part by the Law Offices of Matthew Simone.